Welcome to Survival Mode Disrupted, the podcast for those who are done performing, done people pleasing, and done living life on autopilot. I'm your host, Leticia, the Survival Mode Disruptor, and this is where we create disruptive, unapologetic transformations for those who are ready to exit survival mode and reclaim their power. Every episode is your permission slip to burn the rule book, break the cycle, and finally build a life that feels like yours. So let's disrupt everything that's holding you back and start living life on your own terms. Welcome to Survival Mode Disrupted. This is your trigger warning. This podcast contains unfiltered conversations about trauma, abuse, and survival. Discretion is advised. This is not therapy or medical advice, just real people sharing real stories. So please take care of yourself and pause if you need to. If this conversation hits home, grab the book Survival Mode Exit Plan, your raw, unapologetic blueprint to break free. Available now by scanning the QR code or clicking the link in the comments. Hello, hello. And welcome to another episode of Survival Mode Disrupted. I am your host, Leticia, the Survival Mode Disruptor. And today we have Sadia with us. So Sadia, why don't you introduce yourself?
Thank you so much for having me, Leticia. My name is Sadia Caron. I'm coming at you from Las Vegas, Nevada. I have a pretty scary past, but I like to think, like the caterpillar that became a butterfly, I transformed it into the awesome fabulousness that is my life most of the time.
I love your energy. I love your energy. So tell us your story to and through Survival Mode.
First of all, thank you for this opportunity. One of the worst parts about going through some of the stuff that I did is that until I was at university, I thought I was the only person in the world because no one talked about it. And I was sitting in a Greek mythology class and some idiot Greek guy fell in love with his daughter. No, it was the other way. The daughter, I was like, oh shit, it's not just me. Now I believe that myth is a cover story because, whatever. So yes. When I was very, very, very young, my father sexually abused me. And as I look back on the family dynamic and sort of how I grew up, I was so young, I didn't have words. I kept trying to tell my mom that I was bad. I saw it as some kind of punishment. It has taken me years to figure out that my crazy dad saw me as his happy place. And it's just such an insane dynamic. But, you know, to boil it down, my father got married because his law firm where he worked made it very clear that he needed to. I believe my mother probably was abused herself by her father. So they kind of found each other. My mother was, you know, low self-esteem, desperate to be loved. My dad was desperate to get married. They got married 6 weeks after, they got engaged 6 weeks after they started dating. And I believe the wedding was about a month afterwards. So my mom walks into this thinking, oh, he loves me so much. And my dad was thinking, oh shit, I'm turning 30. I need a wife. So not a whole lot of love. My mom very quickly grew angry and bitter and never had anything nice to say to my dad ever. She constantly mocked him. He went to Harvard, which is a big deal. She went to the best school in the state. So there was a pretty big gap between them. And she just made fun of him constantly. And now I know that is the exact wrong thing to do, right? Men want encouragement and praise from their partner. So then I'm born into this, and every little girl loves her dad and thinks her dad's a hero. And so in a very twisted kind of crazy way, my dad just, you know, kind of misapplied the energy. We'll put it that way. I'm the oldest girl. I have two sisters, and I never really like piece together, you just block it out, right? I was terrified at night. My dad would come into my room and you start acting out. And My mom saw that as proof that she was a terrible mother. Again, the low self-esteem. My other two sisters just kind of, they were, what is it? Collateral damage. Everybody knew something was wrong, but they all blamed me because I was the most visible. And I knew I had to do well in school. So at school, I would pull it together. I was top of my class. I worked really hard because I knew from a young age, I have to get away. I have to get away. This is unsafe. Took me forever to learn that in other houses, it's not like that. The family likes each other. You're born with two parents who love and adore you, want to do anything they can to make your life easier. I was the opposite. My mom was very narcissistic. Whenever I did well at anything, I would get punished. I never drank. I never snuck around. I started babysitting at age 12. It's very common in the American suburbs to take, one of the top students, and you get to earn money by babysitting. Now, I made a dollar an hour, which was below minimum wage even then. But I saw it as my way to freedom. If I can make enough money, I can get away. And my parents weren't paying that much attention to me. So all summer I worked, every weekend I worked. I was a model student and a model daughter on the outside. But I would come home and I was just so angry, angry at my mom for not protecting me, angry at my dad for the stuff I couldn't quite name. The way I see it is the more I talked about it, the more it triggered my mom. She had a bunch of memories she was trying to repress. And it often happens for survivors when your kid hits the age of when you were abused, this weird kind of do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do, where you think you're your kid and it's all very Jungian if you're familiar with Carl Jung. So I say I was a piece of her unresolved memory, of her unresolved past. So then the beatings come, and my mom's beating me and just making me cry, saying horrible things about me. Anything I loved, she tried to destroy, whether it was cheerleading or I was on the student council. We would plan dances. I would get grounded the night before the dance. So this thing that I've organized, I can't even go to. And just the insanity of it. And she was drinking a lot. And just, I was thinking last night, because Mother's Day is coming up, the just ocean of tears. I was so miserable. Anything moms are supposed to do, she did 2% just to say that she did it. Birthday, yes, I had birthday presents. Christmas, yes, I got Christmas presents. But just no support, no help. And actually, the opposite. She began treating me the way she treated my dad, just making fun of me constantly. And when you're a nervous teenager, that's like not helpful. So they got divorced. My mom cheated on my dad, and they got divorced. And my mom married the guy she cheated with literally like as soon as humanly possible. Like you have to separate for 6 months from your husband, then you get divorced. I think that day or the next day she got remarried to a jerk. He saw three daughters in the house and he was like, woohoo, four girls I can get my hands on. I would never stay in the same room with him because he was always trying to grab me from behind or put his hands on my front. But my youngest sister spent a lot of time alone with him. And we tried to tell my mom, and it was the finally I'm loved, and you want to take this away from me. And, my schoolmates are telling me, oh, yeah, my mom wanted to marry this guy, but I didn't like him. And she said, well, I can't marry a guy that you don't like. So being in such an insane household, and again, it's not in our culture, it's not in the movies. I compare it a lot to being gay. That is not me. But for a lot of people, in the 1950s, 1960s, if you never hear about it, you think you're the only one. So let's take that a few steps further. Gays can now get married in the US. Yay! Like legally married in all 50 states. But gay people is about who you want to love. And they have gay bars and they have gay and lesbian centers with books and movies and support. But being a rape survivor, or in my case, an incest survivor, it is the deepest violation of space because it's my body. If you've ever had your car broken into or your house broken into, or you come into work and your whole desk has been packed up, that's kind of a violation. But when it happens in your body, I remember in college, once the, or what you say, university in the UK, I was 18 to 22, like that level of education. The memories started coming up, and I just felt like a used Kleenex. I was like, how can I get this dirt off me? Like, it's in, literally inside me. How do I get it out? How do I get it out? Then I remembered something I heard in Girl Scouts back before the whole scouting thing became tainted. One of my friend's mothers was a psychologist or a counselor of some sort. And she came and taught a class to all of us Girl Scouts. And she said that deep, deep, deep inside of you, there is a place that nobody can touch. Now, I don't know if she recognized signs in me or not, but I think everybody needs to know, no matter how poorly you're treated, how badly life is to you. I'm suing a former employer who hasn't paid me. I've struggled with housing. I was illegally evicted 2.5 years ago. I've been out of a suitcase ever since. There is a part of you deep, deep, deep inside that only you can get, and you can go visit that. And so after that class, when I kind of put the pieces together, I built a little house in my imagination in that place. And you can put whatever you want in it. So I would put flowers and music, and that really helped. It's hard trying to explain to people why I don't go home for Christmas, why I don't talk to my family. But what I did find is that the stage is open to everyone. I first apparently was on stage as a very young child when I would get up on the footstool or the ottoman, depending on what you call it, and recite my ABCs for my grandparents. And I would expect, massive applause. And I would get very angry when I didn't get the applause. You're supposed to clap. You're supposed to clap. And then as I got older, we had this great neighbor family. They were just the model family, like perfect, wonderful family. They had all of these LPs, these records. They took their kids to the Nutcracker every year. So I would hang out at their house. I was in between the ages of their daughters. We would put on plays. We would listen to all kinds of music. So, they take the kids to the Nutcracker in December. So in October, they're already starting to listen to the music. And I heard Dance of the Sugar Plum Fairy and was just like, and they told me what it was, and I danced around. And so I was able to absorb some culture because their cups were so full, they truly runneth over. It little dribs and drabs sprinkled onto me. Let's see. So I made sure to go far away from home for university. Again, in the US, we call it college. And there I started writing poetry. Back then, it was a while ago, it was 86 to 1991, because I took a year off. It was totally okay to major in poetry. Now everyone's like IT and AI, but that's what it was. And I started writing poems about what happened to me. And I guess they were powerful because you read the poem in the class and just the stunned silence. And like no one knows what to say. And you think, oh my God, I've done something wrong. I'm weird. I'm strange. But I'm literally breaking new ground in their head. And what I encourage people to say as a default is, you're very brave and very strong. Thank you for sharing this. Like, ingrain that. Like, I don't think that will offend anybody. And so I wrote more poems and more poems and did this and did that. Then I started submitting them to contests. This was before the internet. So I bought Poets and Writers magazine and submitted to every contest that did not have a fee. And I started winning awards. And then I started giving poetry readings. And at first, I was like this, oh my God, like I'm there, but I'm not fully there. Then I saw a video of Sting, who is one of my just, rock gods. And he sang a song about his father who passed away, and he stared into the camera, not aggressively, like my mom used to stare at me, like, ah, sorry if that triggered anybody. But he was just like, I've got something to say, and you need to hear it. Like, I'm staring into the camera now. And I was like, oh my God, that's what I need to do. I have to get off book and get up and just say the words. And once I started doing that, I would get on stage and the room would go silent. This was a busy cafe where people are drinking coffee and talking. They say I had a stage presence. And I figured the weight of what I had to say and the work I put into being able to say it was like a magnet. And I didn't notice it, but other people started to tell me, you get on that stage and time stops. I was like, okay, doing my life. From that, I got cast in a play with other people. I had studied theater in college when I was in Paris, France for 2 years. I studied Molière and I got to see Molière at the Comédie Française. I went to Shakespeare's house in Stratford-on-Avon, big literature nerd. And then I realized the stage has room for everybody for thousands of years. Nowadays it's more film, but there is room for makeup artists. There's room for wardrobe. There's room for tech. If you're shiny like me, you can be on stage. You can be a stage manager. And I've done a bunch of this stuff. And when I was on stage saying the lines that someone else wrote, I just got this sense of peace. It's like this light from heaven was shining down on me and through me. And that was the first sense I had of ever being at home. You know, home for me was a battleground. School was the safe place. I hated summer break. I hated going home. I never knew, is mom in a good mood or a bad mood, or like what's going to happen? You know, it was a fight to plow through the tears because I've been emotionally abused for 2 hours and get the homework done and, you know, get my outfits and cover up the bruises with long sleeves, like all of that. So from the stage, I was watching television one night. Oh, sorry, I keep bumping the table. And I saw Ricky Martin. This was back in 1998 or 1999. So it was a while ago. Ricky Martin was on Saturday Night Live, which is our number one improv comedy show. It comes on at 11:30 at night and it's live. He sang, he was the musical guest. I went out the next day and bought his CD. I was like, I need that. And I got a lot of that. I soon moved back to New York and I learned how to salsa dance. And you get to hold on to a hot guy in like a waltz position, right? And there's this whole etiquette, and it was so safe. And I really got in touch with who I am. You can express yourself, you can be sexy, but no one's gonna hurt you because you're technically in public, right? I had so much fun. I was the Cinderella dancer. I was the worst one, but for the right reasons, because I love the music so much. I did everything backwards. But with enough work and with some help from my friends, I became one of the best dancers. And it was social, and I got to get my hands, very respectfully, on really hot guys and talk to guys and make friends. And we all love the music, and I learned Spanish. It was amazing, amazing. I went all in. I bought fancy dresses. But I never got to do that part of being a girl when I was younger. I was in a battleground in America going to prom. It's a big fancy dance when you're 17, 18 years old. I never went. So for 2.5, maybe 3 years, I learned how to make friends, how to talk to people, how to just feel like the belle of the ball. But every night is not a perfect night. Some night I'm the one every guy wants to dance with, and some nights it's this other girl. And I learned to be gracious. You know, take your turn and wait your turn, just like on stage. When it's my turn to give my lines, live the moment, be the moment, feel the moment. And literally, I sometimes feel, sorry, my hands disappear because of the green screen. I feel this light coming down and coming through me, and it's beautiful, but you have to know when your turn is up. Don't grab it. Then you're a ham. Then you're annoying. Just when your turn is done, you'll know. And then step aside. And I never learned that growing up. From all that salsa dancing and all that wonderful Spanish music, I started writing songs. This was before 9/11. So, again, 26 years ago, it's hard to believe. And I put them on my answering machine. So, if you called my phone, it was, "Hi, this is Sadia. Here's my new song. Are you strong enough to love me from so far away?" Beep. Well, as it turns out, I met a very famous music producer at a party. I didn't know that that's what he did. He wanted help writing a play. English major, I had just written a play about a girl who goes salsa dancing in New York City. I called it A Place to Call Home, and it got chosen for a reading series. We did a staged reading, and I got to cast it. It was so fun. All my salsa friends were in it, and it was like ripped from real life. So I'd just written a play, and he was calling me for my help writing this play. We were going to write a play. Well, after the third or fourth time I get a message from him, because you know we're making appointments and changing, he's changing the appointment. You know, thank you so much for last week. Let's meet this week. He says, "Sadia, I'm sick of hearing number one songs on your answering machine," because it was a new one every week. And I said, "Shadow, I don't know what you're talking about. These songs haven't been released. I'm just Sadia. I make up stuff and I sing it. What are you talking about? Top 40 number one hit songs." He said, "Do you know who I am?" I'm like, "Yeah, you're Shadow, the guy I'm writing to play with." He's like, "No." "Well, yes, but no. I'm Shadow Morton. I wrote Leader of the Pack. I did Indigata Davida. I worked with Vanilla Fudge. I worked with this. I worked with that." And I was like, "Oh. Like I was just dumbstruck, right? I didn't want to offend him. I knew the songs he was talking about." He said, "I'm going to take your stuff to Ahmet Ertegun. I had no idea who that was. He's since passed away. He was the head of Atlantic Records. And I said, okay. So it's so funny because I like to be correct. I like to be perfect. I like to be proper. You know, I've taught English in Europe and I know all the grammar. I know all the commas. I know all the conjugations. But God keeps throwing me, or the universe, if God offends you, keeps throwing me into these situations where I'm just out of my league. And I said, Shadow, I don't know what to do. He said, call up any music studio in the city. Tell them Ahmet Erdogan wants to hear your stuff. You'll have no problem. So I knew one friend with a music studio. I recorded 4 demos. They were amazing. I was this close to getting signed. And then 9/11 happened. And everybody fell apart. Shadow had to go to California. My music producer regrettably relapsed on heroin. Sadia's just kind of like, oh, okay. And I moved to Brazil because I wanted to just get away. I was like, I can't. I need something completely new. Down there, I learned Portuguese. I got on television. I did a huge play, a musical down there. I taught English. It was amazing. Then it was time to come home because of my visa being expired. I wound up in LA, where I joined the National Actors Union, SAG-AFTRA. And did a bunch of TV shows, was in a bunch of movies. That was great. And now I'm in Las Vegas, where I have an album of comedy songs. They are slightly inappropriate. I like to think they are classy. It's adult topics, but it's not OnlyFans, okay? It's adult topics in a funny way. Apparently, my true calling is comic. I did comedy in New York. I did it in LA. I've done it out here in Vegas now for 3 years. And comedy is really hard for a woman. And especially a woman with my background. I don't drink. I don't smoke marijuana. I don't do cocaine. I'm not going to sleep with a manager to get a job. That's just who I am. If you want to do all that stuff, that's fine. I'm not going to judge, but I don't do that. So it's tough. And I wrote all the comedy songs just by spending so much time in comedy clubs around a bunch of guys. And I came home one night and I said, God, I'm a reasonably attractive woman. I'm 5'9". I think that's 168 centimeters or 186. I'm not sure. I am slightly short of 2 meters, so probably 186. And I wrote my first song in 90 seconds. And bleep it out or cut this part out if it's inappropriate. But it goes, dicks, dicks. There's lots of different dicks. Some are short. Some are thick. Some are teeny tiny. Don't get whiny. And it ends with, no matter what dick God gave to you guys, listen up. You have hands and a mouth. Just use them too. So men have thanked me for that, saying, so it is kind of men's mental health. I wrote a song called Toilet Bowl. A guy helped me write it and gave me all the rights. It's all the steps men need to remember when they go to the bathroom, when they go to pee. If there's real man intel in there, it's because a guy gave it to me. So I just want to make people laugh. I know I'm a bit much or a bit weird. I guess comedy is my gift. My superpower is connecting people. I do try to be respectful. I say, if you go to church on Wednesday and Sunday, my album's not for you. My producer won a Grammy for sound engineering. So I walked into the studio one day. Sorry about the airplane. I don't know if you can hear that. And he did my album cover. And if you see my album cover, you'll be like, yeah, a guy totally did that. Not the direction I was going to go, but one of us had a Grammy and it wasn't me. So I was like, oh, thank you, sir. So you got to just go with the flow. I guess if I have a message for people, it's the universe is trying to help you. It's really tough to have someone else's pain, shame, and grief dumped onto you. But that's just one part. And think of it as fuel. You have a part deep, deep, deep inside you that nobody can touch, that is as pure as the day you were born, pure when you were an angel up in heaven, or whatever works for you, right? I believe in free will. I've heard a lot of survivors say, I chose this path. I'm going to respectfully disagree with that. I don't think anybody would choose what I've been through. I really don't. The way I see it is God or the universe or whatever, again, gave us free will. And no matter what sideways shit may happen to you, the universe can fix it. That's what gets me through. I don't believe anybody would choose to go through what I've gone through. Oh, now I want to move into the light, right? Let's make it symbolic. Let me move the camera and see if I can get in the full sunlight. I don't think anybody would choose to go through what I went through because it sucks. Not gonna lie, it absolutely fucking sucks. But the universe can fix it, and that's what gets me through. What do I mean by the universe can fix it? Well, I have an album. I do comedy. I just joined the Royal Society of Arts. I'm an FRSA. I'm a fellow. Imagine that. Like, who knew? So the universe is going to try really hard to make it up to you. I believe that staying sober and not doing drugs is a big part of my recovery path. I do this thing called the blood type diet. It was developed by an American doctor. There's nothing weird about it. I'm blood type A, and it helped immensely. I had huge problems with food, putting things into my body and people commenting on my body. So I don't care how ugly it is or who betrayed you or how effed up it may seem. Just hold on because the universe is all powerful and it can fix it. It can fix it in ways that you can't imagine. And that's what humbles me. Because when I sit here thinking, oh my God, how am I going to pay this bill? How am I going to get this done? How is this going to happen? How's that going to happen? The universe is trying to help me. And as long as I stay sober and don't drink and don't do drugs and try my best to be a good person, the universe is there. The universe is good, the universe is helpful, and the universe helps you find the right people. My name is Sadia, and I think that's enough out of me.
Oh my gosh, I loved it all. I loved that you were able to talk about the things that you've been through in such a light way. It didn't seem heavy, right? It didn't seem, and I think that's a testament to the work that you've done in your healing. As someone who's heard hundreds of stories, the way that you were able to articulate it with such an beaten mood was amazing. And I do agree, sometimes we go through a massive amount of shit. However, if we can learn not to fall victim to the shit that we've been through, I think we are able to excel in life in ways that others often aren't. And I honestly think that my trauma has been my superpower, right? Like, if I hadn't been through what I went through, I would not be the woman who I am today. And the woman who I am today, I would never change in a million years, right? So I love the fact that you have been able to take what has happened to you and almost use it as a springboard. You've been able to excel into places that you probably never imagined as you were going through college, as you were going through high school, as you were going through all the stuff that you went through with your parents. But also listening to your story, I can't help but wonder what your mom went through, right? Because like narcissism often comes behind trauma as well, that it isn't dealt with. It often is personified, which then becomes, well, the world has to be about me. And so it often, when I hear stories like this, I often wonder, like, what did they go through? What did, and it's not to diminish the other person's story, but I'm curious now, about her path as well, that she had to criticize, like that was her go-to for her strength, right? Because like nobody does things unless it gives them some sort of wanted response, right? So thank you for sharing your story, and thank you for that element of, if I leave you with anything, just know that the universe, higher power, whatever you believe, always makes it up to you. But it does take you actively healing in your shit for life to get better.
And you, Letitia, are a goddess. You are
Thank
a
you.
healer. The world dumped all this energy on us traumatized people, right? It's extra energy, extra fuel, extra rocket fuel. And I used to go to the gym, not excessively, but that's, I would just get on that bike and I would just take my anger out on that bike. And as a result, I was in amazing shape. I'm not anymore, but I looked like a fitness model. I was like, that's a positive way to do it. You know, just you are amazing and you are transformed into a healer. And that is not an easy path.
No, it
You
isn't.
are a goddess.
But I'm
You're doing
so
so much good in the world.
grateful. I'm so grateful. Sadia, how can we connect with you online?
Ooh, okay. So if you want professional Sadia, occasionally I post my TEDx talk where I talk about, you know, being an incest survivor occasionally. But if you want professional Sadia, LinkedIn, Sadia Caron, it's just my name. I am with a windscreen in front of a mic going like this. And there's a picture of Las Vegas in the background. I think I'm the only Sadia Caron. On Insta, if you're fascinated by my comedy and my dick songs and my inappropriate songs, my Insta is just at Sadia Caron. The Spotify is Sadia Music, I believe, but the link to the album is in my Insta.
Okay.
Again, not for the faint of heart, but it's not nasty. You know, I wouldn't want a kid to listen to it, but it's not revolting. A lot of the women comics these days are going super nasty, and I don't want to do that. I want to be like, oh, that's clever. Okay. I didn't see that coming.
Okay, so I'll make sure all of that is in the show notes. So before we wrap it all up, one last takeaway for the audience.
If you think you have no friends, I am your friend. No matter how dark it gets, we all get bad thoughts. I had a massive, tough time about 2 days ago. If self-harm thoughts come, make a promise to yourself now, you will wait 24 hours before you act on them. We can't change the feelings. Mother's Day is coming up and a bunch of stuff happened. And I literally was sitting there and I was thinking, I don't want to be here. And I was like, okay, Sadia, okay, we're having feelings. We're going to wait 24 hours and we're going to ask three people for help. Are you hungry? That's usually a big trigger when I haven't eaten enough for a couple of days. My brain gets a little wacko. Have you eaten enough? When was the last time you took a shower? What time is it? Is it 5:30 p.m. on Wednesday? Okay. We made the rule. We can't do anything hurtful until 5:30 p.m. tomorrow. And sometimes I shake my fist and announce the time at the universe for added dramatic effect. But self-harm thoughts will come or may come. They have come for me. I think that's part of trauma. Nothing is worth giving up for. If you give up, they kind of win. So just the feelings won't hurt you. They suck, but the feelings will not hurt you. So make a promise to yourself now that you will wait 24 hours. And if you can, pick a safe space in your home, your apartment, your car. Me, I'm couch surfing, so it's a little confusing. It can be in the bathroom. And just tell yourself, when I feel fucked up stuff, I'm going to go in my safe space and I'm not going to hurt myself. I'm not going to lash out. You know, people are horrible to artists. People are horrible to each other. Be the better person. No one needs to be told they're an asshole. Let the universe figure that out, you know. But if the shitty thoughts come, wait them out. Wait 24 hours, okay? I am your friend if you think you have no friends. I've been through some shit and I've done it. You can do this. You can get through this. The universe just needs time. Just it's a special delivery. Even FedEx takes overnight, okay? So God, the universe works through other people. You got to give the universe 24 hours. The past due bills, the job, the breakup, whatever it is, the universe can fix it. Please take that away. I am this big in the universe, right? I'm a speck in the ocean of life. All that ocean can do stuff I can never imagine. So just hold on and wait to be surprised in a good way.
Yes, listeners, hold on. Give yourself 24 hours to figure it out. Sadia, thank you so much for our time to get today. Listeners, thank you so much for catching another episode of Survival Made Disrupted. And I just want to remind you, you were not built to break, but you damn sure were not built to just survive. Disrupt the cycle, reclaim your life, and thrive on your own terms. And I will see you next week.